How is the media viewing Russia's war in Ukraine? Competing narratives fight for coverage in print, on air, and online. So, are we getting an accurate picture of what's happening in the conflict? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Mohammed Jamjoum. It's often said that the first casualty of war is the truth, and the media is the battleground for competing narratives on Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Images of destruction and civilian suffering dominate headlines worldwide, but both sides accuse each other of disinformation. Take, for example, the Russian airstrike that destroyed a maternity hospital in Mariupol last week. At least three people died in what Western leaders called a war crime. But Russia accused Ukraine of staging the attack. In a now-deleted tweet, the Russian embassy in London accused this woman of being a so-called crisis actor who was paid to play a victim. The Ukrainian and Russian presidents project different images of themselves. Volodymyr Zelensky gives daily updates on social media, dressed in Green Army T-shirts. That's helped to boost his popularity among Ukrainians to nearly 90%. In contrast, Russia's Vladimir Putin is mostly seen in official videos sitting far away from government advisors. An editor on Russian state TV was fined for interrupting a news broadcast with her anti-war message. But Russian media mostly repeat the Kremlin's message of what it calls a special military operation. Journalists who call it a war or invasion face 15 years in prison. Independent outlets have been shut down. Facebook and Instagram are blocked. 58% of Russians support the invasion, according to a survey last week. All right, let's bring in our guests. In Western Ukraine, Olga Tokariuk, a Ukrainian journalist and a non-resident fellow at the Center for European Policy Analysis. In London, Nikolai Petrov, a senior research fellow at the Russia and Eurasia program at the Chatham House think tank. And in Berlin, Markus Zehner, a professor of journalism at the University of Applied Sciences. A warm welcome to you all, and thanks so much for joining us today on Inside Story. Olga, let me start with you today. From your vantage point in Western Ukraine, do you believe that most of the world is now getting an accurate picture of what's happening in the conflict?
Well, you know, it's very difficult to generalize, right? We cannot speak about the whole world. There are specific differences in every region. Well, as a journalist, I'm speaking to many media from different countries. Just today, I had interviews with, you know, media from South Korea to India, Australia, Israel, and United Arab Emirates. And I can also see the difference in the kinds of questions that I'm getting and, you know, the concerns that are different in different countries and the accents that are sometimes put differently. As a journalist, I can say that, you know, my colleagues are doing an amazing job here in Ukraine trying to report on what is happening from Ukraine in extremely difficult circumstances. Four journalists have been killed so far in Ukraine. I happen to know two of them personally. You know, it breaks my heart that my colleagues have to go through such enormous risks because Russians are targeting civilians, are deliberately targeting journalists with the scope to disseminate terror and with the scope, apparently, to prevent the world from knowing what is happening here, to intimidate media and journalists from, you know, reporting from the ground in Ukraine. So I want to commend those courageous colleagues who, despite everything, continue reporting from Ukraine, from the hotspots such as Kyiv, Kharkiv, Mariupol. And, you know, I just want to really stress how important this information is and unbiased reporting is, especially in this era of so many fakes and disinformation coming from the Russian side.
Nikolai, I want to turn the viewers' attention specifically to Russia right now. And I want to ask you about Russians watching or reading or listening to the news within Russia. What are they hearing? How different is what they are hearing or seeing or reading from what most of the rest of the world is reading or seeing or hearing about the conflict in Ukraine?
I would say that Russians are getting very censored and limited picture and images from Ukraine shown by state-owned channels. And as you perhaps know, almost all independent media have been shut up, and even social networks are closed in some cases. But the problem I see is not so much connected with the fact that there is a lack of information. Of course, this is Ukraine, this is neighbor country. There are a lot of personal connections which could somehow compensate. The problem I see is connected with the fact that there is a kind of psychological barrier. Not only the Russian government prefers to call it not the war, but the limited military operation. But the vision majority of Russians do have in their minds is that their army is liberating brothers Ukrainians from Nazi government. And psychologically, it's much more comfortable to keep this vision than to think that your state, your government are committing war crimes and you should do something by yourself. And we do have a lot of cases mm-hmm. when relatives are given calls from Ukraine and they are not understood by their direct relatives in Russia.
Marcus, I want to talk for a moment about this study in contrast between the image that's being projected by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky versus the image that's being projected by Russian President Vladimir Putin. Zelensky is often seen in these social media videos unshaven. He's wearing green army T-shirts. Sometimes he's among his advisors. Other times he's out on the streets. Then you see Putin. And it's very different. These are these official videos where often he's alone or seated very far away, even from close advisors. Has that helped Zelensky? And if so, how much?
Yeah, in fact, it has helped him quite a bit. If you look at how the narrative has been shaped and framed from the Ukrainian side, I think they do it very well. I'm not saying they do it always by purpose, but I think they know how to play social media. They know how to convey a narrative and a certain message. And I think what we're seeing here is basically a kind of modern version of the David against Goliath kind of story. You have this this Ukraine, a country of 40 million, fighting an overwhelming military power, Russia. And you have here this guy, Volodymyr Zelensky, standing up against Putin. And I think the images are really telling. On the one hand, you have Putin sitting on a long table, but kind of being untouchable and is basically behind the walls of the Kremlin. While on the other side, you have Zelensky, who is somebody who is just among his people. And he's looking tired, he's looking worn, he's just dressed in a military shirt. He's not making things up. And so when it comes to authenticity, I think that's clearly on the side of the Ukrainians.
Olga, what do Ukrainians, by and large, think of how President Zelensky has been presenting himself before and throughout this conflict? How much has he been able to transform public opinion through his style of wartime leadership?
Well, we are seeing from the polls that the popularity and the support of citizens, to President Zelensky has grown sharply. Recently, a poll was conducted that indicates that about 90% of Ukrainians support the actions of their president. Before the war, that percentage was around 25%. So he's showing himself, as a true leader of his people, a person who is close to his citizens, who, doesn't keep a distance, who's speaking to them directly, recording video statements several times a day, speaking in the language that people understand, addressing not just Ukrainians, but in fact addressing Russians in their own language, calling on Russian mothers, to take their sons away from Ukraine, calling on Russians to go to protest, thanking Russian journalists or propaganda media workers or former workers for standing up and saying the truth. So, Zelensky is communicating very efficiently and he's rallying the people around him. But I would also say that, it's not just Zelensky who is leading the country and who is kind of inspiring Ukrainians, it's also the other way around. It's Ukrainians who are, with their incredible courage and determination, are inspiring Zelensky to lead this country and, you know, to speak for all these people. And we hear that also in his speeches, in just today's speech at the US Congress, he said again that I'm speaking here on behalf of the Ukrainian people. And this is something that, you know, I think a lot of Ukrainians kind of share, and they appreciate that, that he's not detached from his people. He's speaking for the whole country, and the whole country is speaking in one voice.
Nikolai, there are surveys that have been done in Russia that suggest that a majority of Russians support the invasion of Ukraine. But can this polling actually be trusted? Is it independent?
Well, there are no independent pollings these days in Russia, first. And second, we should have in mind that during the war, it's hard to wait for, correct answers in many cases due to different reasons. The problem is that, nevertheless, I do think that majority of Russians being somehow brainwashed, being strongly focused on the fact that their country did play and does play now the role of a kind of bastion against fascists, against Nazis. And this is how the story is presented by Russian media. Well, they do support their president. And in my view, we can discuss whether this support can be measured in 70 or 60%, like different polls are telling us. But generally speaking, majority of Russians, especially if not to have in mind that the active and very loud minority who were protesting against the war and who are still protesting against the war in spite of very tough police pressure, many of them did leave from the country.
Marcus, you know, President Putin has for quite a while now, several years, he's had this reputation as a wizard of information warfare. He has a reputation as someone who's successfully been able to weaponize social media and other types of information. Is it surprising to you to see how this is playing out thus far?
Yes, you're right. He has successfully actually interfered in the elections. He has tried to turn public opinion also in Germany, also in the United States. But he's failing here. And I think one of the things that probably are not playing out very well for the Russians is the use of a certain language, a certain narrative. Let's take a look, for instance, the use of fascism and Nazis. I mean, Putin was saying, well, we have to go into Ukraine to kind of denazify Ukraine. I mean, the president of Ukraine is of Jewish origin. So how can a Jew actually be a Nazi? I mean, you see a distortion of all the terms and the notions we used to know. And I think this narrative is not playing into his hands. Now, at the same time, from a Western perspective, probably we can see that this way. It doesn't really mean that Russians are going along with that. I think he still has a lot of support, and I'm not really sure that the majority of Russians are looking through this maneuver.
Olga, you spoke in your previous answer about the fact that from your perspective, it's not just Zelensky, President Zelensky, who's been inspiring the people, but it's also the people of Ukraine who have been inspiring President Zelensky. I want to ask you if you think that in the lead up to the invasion, in the lead up to the war, if the reporting from foreign countries was mostly accurate, do you think that Ukrainian voices were really being listened to?
No, I don't think so. In fact, you know, and this, of course, varies from one country to another, but in some, you know, major players in some major countries of the European Union, I can speak for Italy because I speak Italian and I can monitor the information space there. But I know it is also the case in Germany, in France, in some other big countries. Very often, you know, people who go in the media to speak about Ukraine and Russia, those experts, those analysts, those, you know, geopolitics experts, they have never set foot to Ukraine, and they very often described the situation and spoke about Ukraine in through the Russian optics, using some sort of Russian imperialist narrative about Ukraine, very often denying agency to Ukrainians. It was very rare, and it is still quite rare in some countries, to hear Ukrainian voices in mainstream media, although, you know, there have been some improvements since the war started, and there have been more attention paid to what Ukrainians actually have to say. But I think, you know, a big problem is that in the last 8 years since Russia first invaded in 2014, very few in the West listened to what Ukrainians were saying. Very few listened to Ukrainians' warnings that if, you know, Putin is not stopped, if Russia is not punished with really strong sanctions, if there is no strong reaction from the West, Putin will not stop and will only escalate his aggression. Now the same people, well, some of them at least, you know, who didn't listen to Ukrainians and other Central and Eastern Europeans and people from the Baltic states are finally admitting that we were right. But isn't it too late?
Nikolai, you know, we've spoken a lot about the clampdown on independent media outlets in Russia. Just this week, there was an incident. There was an interruption of a news broadcast on Russian television by an editor who shared an anti-war message. And I want to ask you if you think that this would have made any kind of an impact with viewers who have really been inured to the official Russian line about the invasion, by people who've only been watching Russian television and that particular narrative. Would they have found this surprising? Would it have helped to change perceptions in any way?
I think that was very brave action from the side of Marina Avsyannikova. It's her name. And of course, it's very important not only to demonstrate that a lot of journalists and some of them did resign in course of last week. A lot of journalists do not take seriously the Russian. They do demonstrate working for Russian television channels. And somehow we can send a signal to those who are watching television. But as I did already say, the problem I see is not that much connected with the fact that there is a lack of alternative information, of alternative channels. It's possible to find almost everything in the internet these days. There is psychological defense a lot of Russians would prefer to keep in order not to feel themselves in an extremely uncomfortable position. And it's changing. It's changing not only due to grave appearances of some persons, not due to the fact that a lot of celebrities are openly saying, publicly saying against the war, but it's due to the fact that Russians do feel in their usual life that the situation is changing to worse, and that's why they should change their minds, they should change their opinion. This means that Putin is very much limited in time. He should do something in order to, stop the situation deteriorating for him inside the country. And this means that, well, he does have another 2 or 3 weeks to transform the situation to his favor, if only he is capable to do this.
Marcus, for those who believe that President Zelensky and therefore Ukraine, that they're winning this information war, does that also create a perception that Ukraine may be doing better on the actual battlefield than they are?
Well, I mean, if you believe what military experts are saying, then I think Ukraine is doing very well on the ground when it comes to making the advances hard for the Russian military. So I think that's a fact, and that's not really that much influenced by the media appearance. I have to admit, actually, from a perspective as a journalist professor, I mean, what is a little bit striking, it was probably a matter of concern, is the fact that journalism doesn't really play that much of a role right now. We get footage, we get videos directly fed in, actually, into our social media and Twitter accounts, which come right out from the president's palace in Kiev or right from other places without any journalistic kind of assessment and orientation. I mean, this is not a new problem, but it's playing out here quite a bit. So we are seeing things, and we have to make up ourselves what we are seeing. It's missing context.
Marcus, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but may I ask, you bring up an interesting point. May I ask, is it actually harder now than it was a few years back to pass off false information or faked videos? I mean, has online verification of footage, you know, has that entirety of that been strengthened of late?
Absolutely. It has become so difficult. And as much as we sympathize with one side or the other, I think for journalists, they are required to take the footage and to check it and to try to figure out whether this is true or not. By the way, please allow me just to say one word on to Olga. I mean, having been a journalist and still am a journalist myself, and having reported from Moscow, I can tell you that at least the German media is reporting very critically, actually, about Russia, which is always was a very disputed fact. So I think when it comes to Russia, German media is very critical and not pro Putin.
Olga, from your perspective, how prominent a role have disinformation fighters online been playing in all of this?
Well, you know, I think with this war, many people in the West who underestimated the prominence and the impact and, you know, the scope of Russian propaganda and disinformation are finally starting to realize it. And the case in point is with that pregnant woman from Mariupol, Mariana, who, you know, was filmed by Associated Press photographers after the bombing of the hospital. And then we have seen the attempts by several Russian embassies abroad on Twitter to smear her, to say that she was a crisis actor, that she was wearing makeup and she wasn't actually pregnant, in fact. And, you know, Twitter took down those posts, and we've seen the new footage from Mariupol several days after that she actually gave birth to a baby. And I also was in touch with her relatives who confirmed that. They sent me the photos. And I think, you know, for many, that case was something, an eye-opener, because many people didn't believe that Russians could be lying that, you know, that much. And these are Russian officials, and the Russian officials are lying on the highest level. And there is a Russian propaganda and disinformation machine. It consists of so many layers, you know, starting from the troll and bot farms on the social media, such as Twitter and Facebook, and, you know, Russian state media inside Russia, Russian state media that are, you know, broadcasting for the audiences abroad, such as RT and Sputnik, and a lot of also conspiracy propaganda, disinformation websites in many, many countries that sometimes do not, you know, spread just news about Russia or Ukraine. They might be sharing anti-vaccine disinformation or different conspiracy theories. And I hope, you know, this war is kind of brings more awareness and on the level of the governments in the world, the level of the media also, who are bombarded by this disinformation and sometimes find it hard to, you know, establish what is right and what is wrong, what is true and what is not.
Olga,
I'm sorry
to interrupt. If I could just ask you, we just have about a minute and a half left, but I also want to ask you, the way that it's been playing out thus far, has it defied your expectations about how online warfare typically plays out?
Well, you know, this was not something new for me, because I've been researching disinformation for more than 2 years. My actually career in journalism brought me to this, because I encountered as a journalist so much disinformation and how it actually affected people's lives on the ground. So I started to research it. And I think, you know, this is also a goal now for many journalists across the world and for many media to focus on that more, to understand how disinformation works and what real life impact it can have and how it can also fuel wars, because 8 years of propaganda on Russian TV contributed to this war as well.
All right. Well, we have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Thanks so much to all of our guests, Olga Tokariuk, Nikolai Petrov, and Marcus Zehner. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Mohammed Jamjoum, and the whole team here, bye for now.